The writer and the character. Some ideas written down when I was planning a workshop in fiction and worked up into a small essay for this book. Whether they invent the people they write about or borrow them from people they know, fiction writers generally agree that once these people become characters in a story, they have a life of their own, sometimes to the extent of escaping from the writer's control and doing and saying things quite unexpected to the author of their being. My people in the stories I write are close to me and mysterious to me, like kinfolk or friends or enemies. They are in and on my mind. I made them up. I invented them. But I have to ponder their motives and try to understand their destinies. They take on their own reality, which is not my reality, and the more they do so, the less I can or wish to control what they do or say. While I'm composing, the characters are alive in my mind, and I owe them the respect due any living soul. They are not to be used, manipulated. They are not plastic toys. They are not megaphones. But composition is a special condition. While writing, I may yield to my characters, trust them wholly to do and say what is right for the story. In planning the story and in revising it, I do better to keep some emotional distance from the characters, especially the ones I like best or loathe most. I need to look askance at them, inquire rather coldly into their motives, and take everything they say with a grain of salt. Till I'm certain that they are really and genuinely speaking for themselves and not for my damned ego. If I'm using the people in my story principally to fulfill the needs of my self-image, my self-love or self-hate, my needs, my opinions, they can't be themselves and they can't tell the story. The story, as a display of needs and opinions, may be effective as such, but the characters will not be characters, they will be puppets. As a writer, I must be conscious that I am my characters and that they are not me. I am them and am responsible for them, but they're themselves. They have no responsibility for me or my politics or my morals or my editor or my income. They're embodiments of my experience and imagination, engaged in an imagined life that is not my life, though it may serve to illuminate it. I may feel passionately with a character who embodies my experience and emotions, but I must be wary of confusing myself with that character. If I fuse or confuse a fictional person with myself, my judgment of the character becomes a self-judgment. Then justice is pretty near impossible, since I've made myself witness, defendant, prosecutor, judge, and jury, using the fiction to justify or condemn what that character does and says. Self-knowledge takes a clear mind. Clarity can be earned by tough-mindedness, and it can be earned by tender-mindedness, but it has to be earned. A writer has to learn to be transparent to the story. The ego is opaque. It fills the space of the story, blocking honesty, obscuring understanding, falsifying the language. Fiction, like all art, takes place in a space that is the maker's loving difference from the thing made. Without that space, there can be no consistent truthfulness and no true respect for the human beings the story is about. Another way to come at this matter, insofar as the author's point of view exactly coincides with that of a character, the story isn't fiction. It's either a disguised memoir or a fiction-coded sermon. I don't like the word distancing. If I say there should be a distance between author and character, it sounds as if I'm after the objectivity pretended to by naive scientists and sophisticated minimalists. I'm not. I'm all for subjectivity, the artist's inalienable privilege. But there has to be a distance between the writer and the character. The naive reader often does not take this distance into account. Inexperienced readers think writers write only from experience. They believe that the writer believes what the characters believe. The idea of the unreliable narrator takes some getting used to. David Copperfield's experiences and emotions are very close indeed to those of Charles Dickens, but David Copperfield isn't Charles Dickens. However closely Dickens identified with his character, as we glibly and Freudianly say, there was no confusion in Dickens's mind as to who was who. The distance between them, the difference of point of view, is crucial. David fictionally lives what Charles factually experienced and suffers what Charles suffered, but David doesn't know what Charles knows. He can't see his life from a distance, from a vantage point of time, thought, and feeling, as Charles can. Charles learned a great deal about himself, and so let us learn a great deal about ourselves through taking David's point of view. But if he had confused his point of view with David's, he and we would have learned nothing. We'd never have got out of the blacking factory. Another interesting example, Huckleberry Finn. What Mark Twain achieves with great skill and at tremendous risk all the way through the book is an invisible but immense ironic distance between his point of view and Huck's. Huck tells the story. Every word of it is in his voice from his point of view. Mark is silent. Mark's point of view, particularly as regards slavery and the character Jim, is never stated. It is discernible only in the story itself and the characters, Jim's character above all. Jim is the only real adult in the book, a kind, warm, strong, patient man with a delicate and powerful sense of morality. Huck might grow up into that kind of man, given a chance, but Huck at this point is an ignorant, prejudiced kid who doesn't know right from wrong, though once, when it really matters, he guesses right. In the tension between that kid's voice and Mark Twain's silence lies much of the power of the book. We have to understand, as soon as we're old enough to read this way, that what the book really says lies in that silence. Tom Sawyer, on the other hand, is going to grow up to be at best a smart entrepreneur, at worst a shyster. His imagination has no ethical ballast at all. The last chapters of Huckleberry Finn are tedious and hateful whenever that manipulative, unfeeling imagination takes over, controlling Huck and Jim and the story. Toni Morrison has shown that the jail Tom puts Jim into, the tortures he invents for him, and Huck's uncomfortable but helpless collusion represent the betrayal of emancipation during Reconstruction. Freed slaves did find themselves with no freedom at all, and whites, accustomed to consider blacks as inferior, inevitably colluded in that perpetuation of evil. Seen thus, the long, painful ending makes sense, and the book makes a moral whole. But it was a risk to take, both morally and aesthetically, and it succeeds only partially, perhaps because Mark Twain over-identified with Tom. He loved writing about smart-alecky, gopher-broke manipulators, not only Tom, but the King and Duke. And so Huck and Jim and we the readers all have to sit and watch them strut their second-rate stuff. Mark Twain kept his loving distance from Huck perfectly, never breaking the tender irony. But wanting Tom for that final bitter plot twist, he brought him in, indulged him, lost his distance from him, and the book lost its balance. Though the author may pretend otherwise, the author's point of view is larger than the character's and includes knowledge the character lacks. This means that the character, existing only in the author's knowledge, may be known as we cannot ever know any actual person. And such insight may reveal insights and durable truths relevant to our own lives. To fuse author and character, to limit the character's behavior to what the author approves of doing, or the character's opinions to the author's opinions, and so forth, is to lose that chance of revelation. The author's tone may be cold or passionately concerned. It may be detached or judgmental. The difference of the author's point of view from the character's may be obvious or concealed, but the difference must exist. In the space provided by that difference, discovery, change, learning, action, tragedy, fulfillment take place. the story takes place.